David Hawkins is the editor-in-chief of The Fulcrum, a news outlet focused on reversing dysfunction in American government. He's the smartest guy I know in American politics. He's a former senior editor of Congressional Quarterly, CQ, and Roll Call. I'm going to give you a prediction now, and you'll tell me why I'm wrong, but I'm quite sure, even though there are 24 people in the race for president, that the last person standing is going to be Joe Biden. Joe Biden is going to be the candidate. And my bet is that Kamala Harris is going to be the vice presidential nominee. Well, you got a lot of people to pick from. How much do you disagree with me?
To be honest, I don't if you had to, come up with the dream ticket, I think that would be the dream ticket for the Democrats. So sitting here in this, how far are we now? 14 months from the Democratic convention. That would seem to be the obvious, sensical thing for the Democrats to do. Do they do the obvious, sensical thing often? Not often. Did they do it the last time and pay a pretty steep price? Yes, they did. 14 months before the 2016 Democratic convention, a lot of people, I think even me, I got to say, I had put in my office pool that the ticket would be Clinton and Kaine. It was sort of the obvious one. And they went ahead and did it, the Democrats did, and look where we are now. So plenty of opportunity still for factionalism and anger on the left to bubble up. Plenty of opportunity for Joe Biden to squander what is now a pretty significant lead. I mean, he's led in the polls since before he announced, and since he announced, he's actually gone up in the polls. And he's at whatever it is, 24%, which when there are 23 other people running is pretty solid. That is because he has done an admirable job for him of staying on message. He hasn't said anything goofy or he hasn't touched anybody. I mean, let's remember that when he was first getting ready to run, he was sort of right on the cusp of having a, if not quite a Me Too problem, then just something close to it. He has tamped that down. He has stayed relentlessly on message. He's got staff that follow him everywhere to make sure he stays on message. He's running like it's already the general election. He's running like he's already won. And it's working for him, but there's an ocean of time, you know, an entire soccer match of people out to get him.
Talk to me about the other 23. Who are the comers? You take a look at Gillibrand. You take a look as of this morning when we're speaking of Bill de Blasio, who has a 42% rating in New York City, I believe, as a mayor. People don't like him. Everybody's running for president. Maybe on the Democratic side, maybe you could help all of us understand what it is that a Gillibrand or a de Blasio are possibly thinking.
They have nothing to lose, is what they're thinking, I guess. The de Blasio one mystifies me because it does, and you know New York City politics two orders of magnitude better than I do. I haven't lived there in 30 years. But it does seem as though he does have something to lose. Maybe he doesn't want to be mayor for more than two terms.
He can't be. He's term limited, of course, so he can't be.
So up or out. So he's got nothing to lose then, right?
Right.
He can be maybe he wants to be. Presumably, to oversimplify just a little bit, he's running to be the understudy for Bernie Sanders if Bernie Sanders implodes, and the left, the progressive left, is looking for an alternate. That's where de Blasio is, just like the 22nd guy to get in the race, or maybe it was the 23rd, Governor Bullock of Montana, doing the same thing in case Joe Biden implodes, and they're looking for a centrist can win in a purple state Democrat. Then they've got Bullock. But most of these folks, yes, they're not giving up anything. They can exercise their ego. They can position themselves for the future. Many of them, Senator Gillibrand, for example, is young enough that she could certainly run in 4 or 8 or 12 years again. You become a national presence. You deepen your network, your donor network. You position yourself to maybe end up in the executive branch somewhere, as a cabinet secretary or a Supreme Court justice. Someday a president will appoint a politician to the Supreme Court again. We haven't had one of those since Sandra Day O'Connor, who's a politician on the court. So they have nothing to lose and everything to gain except some sleep, because it's exhausting work.
Yeah, but it makes me crazy. Take a look at Gillibrand for a second. She's polling at 0%, 0 to 0.5%. And she's grabbing at everything she can. Well, she should, for example, on the whole question of Alabama and abortion, she goes right down, she's going down there and doing the right thing and all of that. But 0%, when do you get the message?
probably when she, so of course, the real dividing line here is these debates that are coming up in the summer. To get on the debate stage, you have to have some combination of, you have to do a whole lot better than she's doing in the polls now. You have to get all the way to 1%, and you have to raise some money, not just an amount of money, but from a breadth of donors in order to qualify for these debates. Even though they're doing the debates over two nights with 10 stools on the stage each night, that means three or four people aren't going to make it. So there you go.
Looking forward to the way in which the next election, 2020, comes out, not for the presidency, but for control of both the House and the Senate. There's pretty much agreement, as long as Trump is going to be the candidate, that the House will go Democratic again. At least I think so. Maybe I'm wrong. But the Senate...
I think that's true.
But the Senate, that's another whole story, isn't it?
Senate is another story. The Republicans are still up 53 to 47. The way just to repeat the obvious, only one-third of the Senate stands for election every 2 years because they have six-year terms. And the so-called Senate map is drawn without too many competitive seats. There are really only two places in the country, Maine with Susan Collins and Colorado with Cory Gardner, Republicans running for re-election in states that Hillary Clinton did better than Donald Trump. And there are really only, amazingly, only two states in the country, Alabama with the sort of fluke winner Doug Jones, and of all places, Michigan, a guy named Gary Peters, are the only two states where Democrats are running in states that Trump won. So it's a smallish map. There aren't too many targets of opportunity for the Democrats if they want to win back the place. It will take winning once again in a place like Texas, where Beto O'Rourke, came close but no cigar. Could he repeat that again if he got out of the presidential race? Maybe. Could this woman, MJ Hagar, who is a very powerful congressional candidate, maybe? But we're talking about many, many tens of millions of dollars and a huge turnout for the Democratic nominee. It's a very uphill game at this point.
I got 1 minute left. I want to ask you about election security. We know the Russians helped Donald Trump. We know that now. And what is to think that we won't use our security apparatus, our own, to put a stop to it this time if, in fact, Trump knows that these people are for him?
You're right. There's a lot to be worried about there. It is true that as probably many listeners know, that it's the states and cities and counties that run the elections. They know that a lot of their equipment and a lot of their security is bad. They are looking to Washington for a big pile of money to help improve things. Congress gave them $400 million a year ago. It's all gone. They say it wasn't nearly enough. Will Congress pony up and give them at least that much money this summer to get ready for the election? I think somewhat doubtful.
It's always wonderful to have the brightest man in politics that I know, David Hawkins, with us. He is the editor-in-chief of The Fulcrum, a news outlet focused on reversing dysfunction in American government, also former senior editor of CQ and Roll Call, and a great friend. Thank you for being with us, David.
Thank you so much, Alan.